After their individual presentations, the speakers were asked to elaborate on their comments on what might not have been seriously addressed by the presidential candidates. Noam Chomsky spoke first.
If we ask what hasn't been seriously addressed in the past 4 years, the answers are very short, almost anything that matters. What do we do about it? What you all know. There are no magic tricks. It takes hard work, dedication, reaching out to others, trying to, in the case of the Occupy movement, which in my view was very successful and has plenty of potential, what has to be done, and the same is true of other activist movements, is to reach out to the general population. And we can talk about the 99% and say, yeah, we're concerned with your problems and your needs, but they have to believe that. And if they don't believe it, it doesn't matter if we believe it. And we're far from that. It's hard. All of the things that were mentioned, there's been an element of success in reaching out to the general population, but it's nowhere near enough. And take, say, you mentioned global warming. It's probably the most serious issue that the United States and the world faces. It could lead to, it's an issue that involves species survival, decent species survival, and it's not remote. I don't know. And the United States, unfortunately, is in the lead in making it worse. And the way it's discussed, the discourse about it, shows you that. So some of you may have seen, for example, the front page story in the New York Times a couple weeks ago about the ending of the summer melting of the Arctic ice. And it was a pretty alarmist story. It was an interesting one that showed what our problem is. The first half of the story, front page story, was pointing out that the Arctic ice melting was way beyond what even the most dire forecasts were of the sophisticated computer models, and talking about the dangers of this. I won't run through it, but you know them. Then the second half of the article was euphoric. It's a terrific opportunity. It opens the way to more mining, more extraction of fossil fuels. In other words, it opens up the way to accelerate the process of suicide, species suicide. Mm. And that passed, I looked for a while, it passed without comment. And that's true of the presidential debates as well. In fact, it's kind of striking that in 2008, both parties had some gesture towards global warming. The Republicans conceded that there was something going on. The Democrats had some minor programs about it. That's done. In 2012, Republicans didn't mention it. When Romney was asked, he said, well, nothing's known about it. We just need more research. The Democrats had some few weak words. And then both candidates and both parties dedicated themselves with, fervently to what they call energy independence. There's nothing to do with energy independence, but what it means is maximizing the disasters that are going on. We have to extract all the fossil fuels we can as quickly as possible, and that's the best thing we have to do. Well, that's both parties. That's virtually the entire discussion. If you turn to domestic issues, it's the same. So if you look at popular, people have opinions, and they're very well studied. And it's interesting to look at them. So on domestic issues, the public overwhelmingly regards joblessness as the most serious issue. But the banks don't. They regard the deficit as the most serious issue. So therefore, the entire discussion is about the deficit. There's a couple of words on jobs here and there, meaningless ones. When you look at what people think about the deficit, it's pretty clear. Overwhelmingly, the population thinks the way to deal with the deficit is higher taxes on the rich, cutting back the military budget, which is incredibly, as you all know, it's about the same as the rest of the world combined, and making sure you preserve the benefits. you take a look at the two parties, basically the opposite. Media coverage, pretty much the opposite. And if you look more closely, it's quite striking. So there was a very interesting poll of Southern whites, you know, the red states. It's the white working class. Southern whites on was restricted to taxes. And like the rest of the country, a large majority favor higher taxes on the rich. The same large majority favored Romney's tax plan. Now, there's only two possible explanations for this, neither of them very pretty. One of them is that our educational system and media system is so grotesque that people just don't know something of extreme importance to them. The other possibility is that the racism is so deep that if Obama suggested something, you got to be against it. And therefore, even we'll support Romney's tax plan, even if it's the opposite of what we want. I don't see any other possible explanation. All of this, repeat what I said before, I think indicates paths that have to be very seriously addressed. You cannot write off the white working class. You can't say, well, they're all Republicans, the heck with them. Those people have to be reached. You can't write off the Tea Party. If you take a look at people who call themselves Tea Party supporters, you know, get the government off our back, that kind of thing, they've been studied too. Turns out that these people think there ought to be more spending on education, more spending on health. They're wrong about how it should be done, but that's, again, our failure to educate. But more spending, more spending on help for poor people who need help, like dependent women, women with dependent children, more spending. On the other hand, less spending for welfare. Why? Because welfare has been very effectively demonized, originally by Ronald Reagan, who, you recall, he managed to instill the conception that welfare is rich black women being driven in their limousines to steal your money. So, of course, we don't want that. The same is true on international affairs. So a large majority of the public thinks the UN ought to take the lead in international affairs, and the US ought to follow the will of the majority if we don't like it. It's unmentionable in polite circles, in the media or anywhere else. Actually, a majority think that the United States ought to give up the veto at the Security Council and just follow others. If you look at questions like, say, foreign aid, it's again very striking. A large majority think we have to cut back on foreign aid because we're giving away everything to the undeserving poor. The next question, what do you think foreign aid ought to be? The number that people pick is much higher than it actually is. Well, I think that shows, all of this shows there are kind of decent sentiments out there, but they've got to be organized and mobilized, and we can easily continue.
Well, to build on that, I'll make two points. The first one is that there's a really, I think, important barrier that has to be overcome. And that is the barrier that I think we have to also come to terms with, which is that to live in the United States, which was at the center of the 20th century's empire, was to benefit from that empire. And it enabled people in the so-called golden age of capitalism to have advantages on the backs of the rest of the planet. So now when people say our children will not be able to have the life that we had, you know, this apparently is a major test of the decline of America. People say this routinely, your children will not be able to have your life. That is said actually in a way as if it's a bad thing. And in fact, from my perspective, that's not a bad thing at all. It's a good thing that it reveals that the United States, which has a fraction of the world's population and yet consumes 25% of the energy the United States, which is unable to actually buy the amount of products that its population buys, but has to borrow from the Gulf states and China and other countries, and then provide credit cards to a population whose real wages haven't increased substantially since 1973, so that the American dream is sustained by a kind of debt-fueled consumerism, that debt purchased by countries overseas through imperial force, essentially. The power of, you know, aerial bombarding anybody around the world, the Gulf states believing that the United States is their policeman as well, etc. So they are willing to keep their super profits in dollars, they're willing to park them in the United States, therefore the banks are able to have liquidity to give out credit cards, to give out no money down payment for housing, etc. Those perquisites of imperialism are coming to an end. And it's going to be a major cultural battle to convince people that it's actually a good thing that the next generation will not live high off the hog of the planet. So that, I think, is going to be a major, major cultural and political battle to ensure that that is not seen as something bad, but something good. And how to turn that around is going to be very complicated. It speaks directly to questions of sustainability, to, you know, carbon-fueled madness, etc. It speaks directly to that. The second thing, speaking not as an activist, you know, in terms of base building, but as somebody who works mainly as an intellectual, I think it's extremely important for us to work very hard in producing a narrative, a story, a clear conception of how the political establishment in the United States is simply not serious. And again, just developing what Noam spoke about, you know, you spoke about it from the standpoint of climate change. Take the question of Iran. Every mainstream newspaper in the United States has run a story at some point in the last 2 or 3 years, often on page 6 or 7. They run these stories which say very cavalierly in the 12th or 13th paragraph, they'll say that the various intelligence agencies, and when they say various, they mean only three that are important to them, the U.S. intelligence agencies, the Israelis, and the agencies associated with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. These three intelligence agencies are all in agreement. And this has been stories over the last 18 months at least. These agencies are all in agreement that Iran has no present desire or has no weapons program. There is no interest in weaponization. All the mainstream media have reported this. The New York Times, the Washington Post, even the Wall Street Journal ran a story where deep in the story they said none of the agencies that matter to them believe that Iran has a nuclear weapons policy. And yet, the political establishment has built this so-called case that Iran must be stopped, and you saw the roadrunner standing there with his little sign at the UN saying that the red line cannot be crossed. Nonsense like that. They are not serious people. These are duplicitous people. They are dangerous people. And yet, the bulk of the population, including many of us, you know, many of us take him seriously. These are duplicitous people. They are not serious. They are running the planet into a very dangerous direction. You know, thank God for WikiLeaks. If you go back and look at the WikiLeaks corpus of the State Department cables, and just look at the climate change cables, at the same time as the Obama administration was so-called trumpeting a new climate change policy, breaking away from Bush, right? Obama goes in this magnificent way and arrives in Copenhagen to broker the deal. At the same time as in public they play this, you know, public relations exercise, behind the scene, State Department officials are strong-arming countries, going to Bolivia, going to Ecuador, going to Equatorial Guinea, and telling countries that you better vote against a global entente, otherwise we'll cut off your aid. And despite the fact that Evo Morales has decided quite stupidly to build a road right through a protective forest, Morales told the State Department official to get the hell out of his office. And thank God for WikiLeaks that we can read about it. And yet, we, all of us, have faith in this political establishment. We think it's serious. These are not serious people. We need to be revealing to our neighbors, to our friends, to our communities, that the political establishment is full of shit. And we just don't do that. We take them seriously. We treat them as if they are people that we have to engage with, that we have to debate with on a rational terrain. They don't behave rationally. They are serial arm twisters. When are we going to figure that out?
Well, I can't follow that, but what I can add...
That I said the word shit?
Exactly, exactly. But I think what I can add and what it strikes is it's sort of building off of this idea that the political establishment is not serious and that it can be incredibly frustrating and angering as it is, but it's also incredibly empowering, right? This isn't some sort of monolithic power that can't be defeated. They're, in fact, kind of an easy target for critique in a lot of ways. And I think that one of the things that maybe needs to be said and that we can focus on as activists is that I actually think we're usually a lot harder on ourselves than we are on any of the political establishment. And I feel like I've had much more harsh and critical conversations among leftists in the age-old tradition of the left in the world about sort of differences among ourselves and nuances in our ideological positions than we're even applying to those that aren't even on our team, right? So here we are debating over really the definitions of the socialist tradition or the anarchist tradition, and we're directing all of these bombs at each other, and we're directing all of these criticisms at each other for the languages that we're using and the ideologues that we're worshiping versus the other ideologues that he's worshiping. And meanwhile, this carnival is taking place in power that we're not actually addressing any of this to, because we're so distracted by all of this infighting among ourselves. And there's this idea that we have to resolve all of our personal grievances and differences first before we can take on the foes. And I would just like to reverse that course and say, okay, you know what? We don't agree on everything yet. I don't agree on everything with everyone, but there are lots of things that we do agree on, and those things are usually that what's happening at the level of state power is absurd. And so maybe we can just sort of use this moment, now that the election is over, to sort of lighten up on each other and look for common goals. So there's my tag on to that.